Hello, everyone. Welcome to LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. We're back after, well, a week off for the holiday?
I think we had one after the week.
Oh, I just wasn't here.
Yeah, yeah. It was just me and Ray in a new studio, though.
It's
so this is your first time in the studio. It's a lot bigger, so maybe if I get off on a rant, you can take a couple laps.
It looks like around. It looks like the set of Black Swan in here with the.
I've never seen Black Swan, but won a lot of awards.
Step your man card game up, all right?
Yeah.
I'm Ryan Green. That's Case Kiefer. LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk every Monday here at 5:30, and let's just jump right into it. The biggest story from the weekend was UFC 131. Kind of a mixed bag of a card. A little underwhelming, maybe going in. I think it maybe turned out a little better than some people expected. But you know, what were some of the biggest takes out of this? You were up there in Vancouver when you were avoiding hockey fans. You were watching some UFC action. What'd you take away from it?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the hockey thing. I think that was a big reason why people were saying that the Canucks being in the Stanley Cup kind of took away from the event. There wasn't a whole lot of buzz in the town, but you know, it turned out pretty good attendance. I think they sold a lot of tickets at the last minute, and you know, really enthusiastic crowd even from the beginning. So I think it turned out good. And as far as the card, this was one I know Ray looked at last week, and not sure he exactly knew what he was talking about. He goes, "This looks like a boxing card. There's only one fight I want to see." Well, I think it turned out better than guys like Brewer were saying. I think it was an above average event. You know, it's not going to be like the one in Toronto where we look back at the end of the year and say, "Wow, that was something special." But it also wasn't bad. I mean, just about every fight on the card was pretty entertaining. And of course, capped off by Junior Dos Santos retaining his number one contendership to Cain Velasquez. And just, I mean, you saw Shane Carwin's face. I'm trying to come up with a nice image to do what he did to Shane Carwin, but I mean, it was just, it was brutal the way Shane Carwin's face looked at the end of that fight.
It was like Clubber Lang in Rocky III, where he goes, "I'm gonna bust you up." That's basically what he did. He busted his face up. Carwin had a couple major cuts. His nose was clearly broken at the end of the first round, and he just still stood in there and took it. And, you know, I kind of want to talk about Dos Santos, because I kind of felt the same way about when I watched him fight his last fight against Roy Nelson, where he has these dominant first rounds and then just kind of, I'm not going to say he let off the pedal, but...
But he kind of did.
He should have ended that fight in the second round.
Yeah.
I know you can tell he probably has a ton of respect for his opponents, but, I mean, come on, end it.
Yeah, you would think so, and he pretty much even admitted that. While he was battering Shane Carwin and drawing his blood in the first round, he even turned to the referee and said, "I'm getting tired in this." And he goes, "No, keep going, keep going." Then he was kind of gassed in the second round. Basically, what you're saying absolutely kind of mirrors what Dana White said after the event, UFC president. He said, "Look, I think Dos Santos is great. I think he's number two guy in the world right now for sure. But if he pulls this against Cain Velasquez, where he comes out and punches himself in the first round, it's not going to work, because Cain has probably the best conditioning in the not probably. He has the best conditioning in the heavyweight division. He's going to keep coming at him for five rounds." So, you know, why Dana's saying all this, not taking away from Junior's performance, but just saying he thinks it's kind of a good matchup for Cain. Interesting, the offshore odds makers have already come out with the line, and Junior Dos Santos is a slight favorite.
That makes no sense.
What do you make of that? I think Junior Dos Santos is minus 125 and Velasquez is minus 105.
Well, here's why I bet. Because, after the fight, when Velasquez was in the octagon and came up and shook his hand, you're just kind of looking at him, and yeah, he had a shirt on and you couldn't really tell, but he kind of, I mean, you could tell his body had taken a hit by being on the shelf from the shoulder surgery. He just kind of looked normal.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I mean,
he didn't look impressive.
We've seen the kind of surgery he had, you know, some kind of rotator cuff surgery. I mean, we see that in other sports all the time. It takes guys a long time to come back from it. Obviously, he couldn't train for a long time after he got this surgery. He still hasn't started yet. So I think that there's just maybe a little bit more uncertainty. Right now with Dos Santos, you know what you're going to get every time. The guy is just an insanely good boxer, the best boxer in the heavyweight division. I mean, I think that he's just a great boxer, plain and simple. But I think Velasquez does everything well. The question is just going to be, how does he come back from this injury? How does he come back from this surgery? I actually like him in this fight. I think that's a good matchup for him. I think he's more well-rounded. I know we're 4 or 5 months early to when it happens, but I would like Velasquez to win this fight. Not to say JDS doesn't have a chance, but I just think Velasquez is more well-rounded.
JDS. Is that what you got him entered in your phone as?
I got him in
you text
in my
him,
phone.
JDS, what are you up to?
Yeah, no, I will say this, though. It's kind of amazing just that I could text him, because when he came here for the Ultimate Fighter in January, the dude could barely speak English. He had a translator every time he talked to us. Now 5 months later, he doesn't even need a translator. I think that says something about him too, that the guy's really smart. I think that does help in the octagon. I think that he has, you know, he's never going to have a bad game plan. His game plan here was he knew Shane Carwin was going to shoot to take him down, so he worked so hard on his wrestling. And Shane Carwin, who's a national championship wrestler, couldn't take him down. So there's something to be said for that too.
But well, let's talk about Carwin a little bit, because this is a guy whose career is just talk about just hitting a really unexpected, an unfortunate wall. You know, he was this big wrecking machine coming into the fight against Lesnar. Looked like he had that fight won, and all of a sudden it fell out of his grasp, and he lost, got hurt. Came back for this fight, loses again, and now how much of his mojo has he lost? Because I remember them promoting him going into that Lesnar fight, 12-0, every fight ended in the first round. I mean, do you think other heavyweights still fear him like they did maybe a year ago?
I think probably the only guys that do fear him like that are the lower tier guys that probably aren't up there right now. I don't think the top guys really do. I mean, we've seen probably two of the top three guys really bulldoze through him. He still handled Frank Mir pretty easily, but I do think some of that invincibility is lost. And look, the guy's 36. That was probably his last shot, I think, in that fight to get an immediate title shot. He's going to have to go win three or four fights now, which, from looking at him the last couple times, you wouldn't think he's capable of. It is really interesting, I think, as what's next for him. He might have a broken orbital after that fight, so he might be out to the beginning of the year. But a few names being tossed around. Obviously, Frank Mir is coming off a win. He could fight him, but probably not, because he handled Mir pretty easily. Roy Nelson, he was supposed to fight at the beginning of the year. They both have two losses in a row. I told you earlier, I think that's the odds-on favorite for him to fight. Either that, or maybe a rematch with Brock Lesnar, or perhaps an up-and-comer like Travis Brown. Who do you want to see Shane Carwin fight next?
I kind of like the idea of the Roy Nelson, because here's the million-dollar question. If him and Roy Nelson fight, are they fighting to keep their status in the UFC? I think Roy might be.
I think Roy
would for sure. I think Carwin still is probably like two or three losses away from that type of fate. But I think there's no secret about the fact that Dana, you know, could live without Roy Nelson. And especially if he has another underwhelming performance like he did against Mir, you know, and you look at his fights against Mir and Dos Santos, they're pretty much the same. Took a pummeling in the first round and then just, you know, showed a lot of heart in surviving two more rounds, but really didn't do much of anything in the second two rounds. So if he does that again, I think Dana says, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Roy Nelson is still the favorite to get the fight. The only maybe holdup is Roy's probably going to want to take a fight sooner, because although he was beaten up badly by Frank Mir, he had no major injuries. I mean, he could technically turn around and get a training camp in the next 2 or 3 months. If that happens, I think you mentioned Dana obviously is upset with Roy Nelson. If Roy loses again, his third loss in a row, I think he's gone. I don't know if he would do if Dana White would do the same thing to Carwin, but here's the thing. If Carwin loses three in a row, he's 36. He has tons of money. He's an electrical engineer on the side. If he gets beat up again, maybe the UFC doesn't cut him, but does he look at himself and say, why am I doing
why
this
am I
anymore?
Doing this? Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of even wondering if he's doing that now, because, you know, he's been to the top. He was the interim title holder. Where's the motivation to keep pushing yourself if he's looking in the mirror today and looking at what his face looks like?
See, now I didn't know that about the electrical engineer and it's not like if fighting's taken away tomorrow, he's going to be up a creek.
He's doing okay for himself. There's kind of some confusion of how much he's doing it. Now, going into the Lesnar fight, he was still absolutely a full-time electrical engineer in Denver. The question actually came up this week. Someone said, I hate to ask you this, but how's your other job going? How's it still going? And he's like, I still do it on the side. So maybe he's not doing it full time anymore. Maybe he's just consulting. He didn't really want to go into that. But either way, he's got a future after fighting. This isn't all that the guy's thinking about.
Which is more than a lot of guys can say.
Definitely.
Well, what else came out of this this weekend? One thing I found interesting, that maybe we can hit on here a little bit, is Dana White announcing last week that I believe it's starting in, when is it, August or September, all future main events, even non-championship fights, will be 5-round fights. Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it personally, but I know there's some people out there who don't.
Yeah, I keep going back and forth. I'm not really sure. I think that there's positives and negatives. It might be on a fight-by-fight basis. Here's the thing, though. Right after Dana is talking about how great of an idea this is and it should all be five-round fights, well, Then we asked him afterwards, so do you think that this one would have been a good five rounds? And he said, no, Shane Carwin suffered enough. I'm glad this was only three rounds. So it was kind of funny right after making that announcement. I think it's good. I think maybe, though, if I would have instituted it, I might have just done the pay-per-views, because these guys usually, if it's a main event and a title isn't up for grabs, it's going to be a number one contender, like we saw in this last fight. You know, Junior Dos Santos and Carwin were fighting for a shot at Velasquez before Rampage was fighting at a shot at John Jones. But he said it's going to be everything. It's going to be the shows on Spike, the show on Versus. I'm not really sure if those need to be five rounds. Those are still usually good fights, but I think it does take a little bit away from, you know, the title fights being five rounds when that happens.
And plus, you know, you mentioned Carwin getting beat, you know, into oblivion there. Plus, you have the flip side where that Rampage Matt Hamill fight was basically a bunch of duck duck goose for three rounds. Do people, you know, are people? And I remember being in the arena and just hearing the boos in that entire third round at the lack of action. Would anything have changed with 10 more minutes of fighting, or would people just have become that much more restless?
Yeah, I mean, I think they would definitely become that much more restless. So, a lot of questions. I think that, like I said, I guess I'm a little bit for it, but if you would have asked me 2 days ago, I would have been a little bit against it. I think we're probably going to have to give it, you know, 6 months. It looks like it's probably going to start in August, sometime after 133, where Phil Davis and Rashad Evans have already signed three-round agreements. So, sometime at least by August, September, we're going to see five-round fights every main event in the UFC.
I think it adds some intrigue.
Yeah, I mean, definitely adds some intrigue. Going back, okay, we talked about how this one would have been bad for five rounds. 2 weeks ago, we had the Ultimate Fighter finale here, Clay Guida and Anthony Pettis, and wasn't really the most exciting fight. Guida kind of out-wrestled him late on for three rounds. I would have loved to have seen two more rounds there, more rounds of Anthony Pettis throwing, you know, crazy strikes, trying to knock out Guida. So, like I said, pretty 50-50.
See, and I think the five-round fights kind of favor more the little guys. I want to watch those. I want to watch the little guys go at it for five rounds.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see less stoppages as you go as you go down to the smaller weight classes. Which, speaking of the smaller weight classes, we can't really overlook the other big story of UFC 145. I know a guy you really like, Kenny Florian, came out and beat Diego Nunes. You watched. What do you think of his performance? I know you're a Kenny Florian fan, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was all right. I mean, it was good given the circumstances. That obviously, I mean, how much weight did he have to cut in that last?
I mean, he was kind of unclear about it. All week he was saying, "Oh, this is a lot easier than I was supposed to be." Blah blah blah. And then Joe Rogan runs up there for the post Octagon interview, and he goes, "Oh, I'm not gonna lie, it was really tough. One of the hardest things I've had to do." So I guess. I don't know. He's probably telling the truth there, but it's kind of hard to tell exactly because these guys still think they're being coy. They don't want to give too much away.
My girlfriend, I remember we were sitting there watching, and she didn't know anything about him cutting all the weight and all that. And she goes, "God, he looks really sickly." She said he doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
So you could tell his face was sagging a little bit, but you gotta give the guy credit for hanging around and doing that. I don't how real of a contender is he at that weight though.
Well, now here's the thing: because of his name, I think more than anything, Dana White says he more than likely will have the next title shot against Jose Aldo, which I kind of disagree with. Chad Mendez is undefeated at 145. He was supposed to get the next title shot, but took another fight because Aldo is hurt. I don't know if I like that Florian jumps over him, but here's why. We got to remember, fighting, if it's boxing, if it's UFC, whatever, it's different than just, it's got to be about who you can sell. And you can sell, you're going to do more pay-per-views on a Florian versus Aldo than an Aldo versus Mendez, because the average guy out there that, you know, just likes to watch fighting every once in a while doesn't know who Chad Mendez is. They know who Kenny Florian is, and Jose Aldo's kind of getting introduced to the UFC audience. I think putting him against a name like Florian, who I think he would probably beat pretty easily, it's going to rise his star. And then maybe if Florian does upset him, I mean, you've got a pretty big star in Kenny Florian now that has a championship belt. So I don't really like the idea of him getting the next title shot. But, I mean, what do you think? You think he should be next, or would you rather see a guy like Mendez?
I think you got to put more in to get the title shot. I mean, I thought at the end of that fight, I was honestly sitting on the couch thinking, I don't know, it could go either way. And I think if, you know, one fight against a, you know, what would you consider it, a middle of the road opponent in that weight class and kind of impressive win, I don't think that's enough to do it for me. Yeah, I think that's getting by on name.
I agree. I thought it might have been a split decision, too. I thought Florian won. I had him 29-28. But in that last round, especially late, Nunes did some good things. I think that Florian, he just didn't get up in time. He only got up with about 2 minutes left. He dropped Florian to a knee with one punch. I thought maybe, you know, that's the type of thing where one judge would be like, oh, maybe Nunes won that. And I thought maybe it would be closer on the scorecards, but it wasn't. Judging was another problem. But yeah, I agree. I think that Florian, because of his name, because of what he's done in his career, he shouldn't be too far away from a title shot, but I think he should have to win one more. I mean, He beat Nunes, who's probably a top 10 guy, but near the bottom of the 10. Now I think you go beat a top 5 guy before you get that title shot. There's a lot of talk of the UFC signing kind of the best featherweight in the world, who's not with the UFC right now, Hayoki from Japan. He was in attendance. Why not sign him, and instead of putting him right against Aldo, because then he didn't earn it yet, why don't you put him against Florian and
make that a contender? Yeah, kind of like a Jake Shields situation.
Yeah, whoever wins that, one of those two guys is going to clearly deserve it to fight Jose Aldo. But, you know, whoever it is, I'll watch. It'll be interesting. But I don't think Aldo's giving his belt away anytime soon.
No, I don't either. Yeah, I don't think either of those guys are going to get him.
Yeah, I agree. I think Mendez actually is a little bit more deserving than Florian right now, but that's not going to happen.
Why not, just for the hell of it, throw Sam Stout in there after that knockout?
Yeah, Sam Stout, that was a pretty amazing knockout. If you haven't seen it, Dana White said he thinks it's one of the most vicious, if not the most vicious knockout in UFC history. Sam Stout, it was kind of interesting. All week, the guy talked about how much a knockout would mean to him, because he's been in the UFC for 5 years now. Or maybe only 4 years, but 10 fights, never had a knockout. He's saying, I'm calling myself, my nickname is Hands of Stone, and I haven't knocked anyone out. Well, he got his shot. Of course, he trains locally here in Las Vegas, lives in Toronto, but comes here to his brother-in-law and best friend Sean Tompkins' camp at Tap Out. And what he said was that Sean Tompkins noticed something on film that, and I don't remember the exact technical of it, but it was something when Eve Edwards got 1 foot too far in front of him, and kind of threw the straight right, that he dropped his one hand. So Sean Tompkins told him, if you just come over the top of the big hook there, I think that you can do some damage. Well, first time it presented himself, what did he do? He kind of like closed his eyes and just winged away. And
His head was down.
Yeah, I guess Sean Tompkins knew what he was talking about, because Edwards just flies back, one punch knockout. Can't ask for much more excitement than that. And I mean, the place just went wild. The people in Vancouver obviously rooting for Canadians all night, and they loved to see Stout get that, and Stout was obviously pretty pumped up and won a $70,000 knockout of the night bonus check. He's now on checks in 4 of his last 5 fights.
That's awesome.
Pretty amazing. The dude. I mean, he's getting paid okay already for being in the UFC, but it means something when you get $70,000 extra check every time you go out there.
What do you consider a better knockout, that or at 130, Stefan Struve going down against Travis Brown?
Yeah, honestly, I would pick the Stout.
Pretty nasty.
Yeah, I would say Brown's probably the second best of the year. I think Brown might have looked just cooler, just because Stout is so gigantic. It's like a tree, and just to see him fall, I think that might have looked that might have looked pretty cool. But I think those are probably 1 and 1A best of the year. But
those are amazing.
I gotta lean Stout just a little bit.
Anything else to empty out the notebook? You went up to Vancouver. You got to have more for us. What else you got from this weekend? Yeah. What stood out to you?
I do have more Vancouver. Well, one thing that stood out I won't go long on this since this is a sports show. Vancouver is beautiful. I highly recommend everyone going there. It was awesome. I think I kind of got used to the 68-degree weather every day. I came back today, and I think it's only like 90 outside, and I'm like...
Feels awful.
Yeah, I'm like dying after that. So Vancouver was great. Judging was terrible. You know, people are giving the first fight of the night, Michihiro Omigawa, should have won. They gave it to Darren Elkins. I guess we should just touch on the last featured bout. Mark Munoz beat Damian Maia, but Damian Maia clearly won the first round, and some judge scored at 30-27, sending Dana White into one of his famous tirades that everyone loves to hear. So I think judging was the other big theme.
And you can read all about that on LasVegasSun.com/fighting. Everything Kiefer had from the weekend up in Vancouver, and I'm assuming you had no problem clearing customs on the way back, right?
No, I didn't, but I was joking. This is actually, God, you're leading me in perfectly. It's like we're on the same wavelength. I'm writing a story about a guy named Dave Herman today who won his first fight, and it was weird. I'm going through customs, and they're like, what are you doing here? And I was like, I was covering the UFC event. And they're like, oh, you know Dave Herman? And now I'm writing about Dave Herman, so LasVegasSun.com fighting. You'll check all that out. Yeah, it's just kind of weird. Everyone you can mention, you know, everyone else is mentioning Brock Lesnar dropping off, and the custom agents goes, oh, what about Dave Herman? He came through here.
Weird.
Yeah, exactly. Pee-wee. It's his nickname. That's really his nickname. Well, that's not the worst nickname of the fight. This is the last thing I'm fighting, I promise. Worst nickname in the UFC fought. He got submitted by Chris Weidman. His nickname is Jesse the Water Bongfelt.
Really?
Yes, that's really his nickname. That's not just a joke. How bad is that? You're speechless.
Wow.
Yep, that bad.
My favorite in all the UFC is Volkman. His nickname is Christmas because he looks like Lloyd Christmas from Dumb and Dumber.
Wow, I didn't even know that. You never knew that? I didn't even know that.
Go Google it. It's Jacob Volkman, right?
Yeah, I know Jacob Volkman.
And he has the same exact like bowl haircut. But the guy's a great story. He has has his own chiropractic practice, and he advertises it on his trunks.
Yeah, and he's fighting in August. So, I mean, it was just bad nicknames all around at this one. We also had Nick the Promise Ring, which has got to be one of the worst.
Steve's cracking up.
Fighter nicknames. Here we go. You know, I just hope now that, I guess, Ring won, so it's not likely. But if we could get Nick the Promise Ring against Jesse the Water Bongfelt. I think that's like co-main event status just for the nicknames there. And they're in the same weight class. They're both middleweights.
What does America come to? That's amazing. All right. Well,
both of them are Canadian. There you go. Both of them are Canadian. You just made the connection.
Leave them up there then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got a few minutes left, so we're going to obviously talk about the other big sports news today. The NBA season officially comes to a close. Case was crying into his airline pillow last night as Miami went down at the hands of Dallas in Miami. And you know, let's talk about this we're not going to talk about the whole LeBron and whatever. Let's talk about this from a gambling aspect. It sounds like Vegas sportsbooks finished their season on a pretty high note, because from the sound of it, Miami -180, -190 was one of the more popular plays among sharps going into the series.
Yeah, I actually heard. The first three games were really bad for books, and they kind of recovered in the last three. The first three, they said both sharps and the public were on the right side of all three. That kind of changed towards the end of the series, and it changed because everyone was on Miami for the series, and obviously Dallas wins. So you know, I think that they obviously don't release all the final numbers like it's the Super Bowl or something, but I think it probably ended up being an above average NBA finals for the sports books. Not the best, but they certainly didn't lose money with Dallas coming to win the series.
Well, now comes very interesting. This is, you know, I think these next few months are going to be really interesting for the Vegas books, because, you know, this is widely regarded as the dead period now, as soon as the NBA finals end, all the way up until the start of the NFL season. But you know, there might not be an NFL season, and likely it's probably not going to start at least, you know, probably until 4 or 5, 6 weeks late. Who knows if there's going to be an NBA season next year? That's two big cash cows for the local economy, the local books. It's pretty bad. Do you sense any panic right now that the dead period's coming?
I mean, I think you have to. I think everyone in town is shuddering at the thought of no NFL. I mean, what do you do? That's pretty much the only reason why sports books are even around at this point. That's the only league where they just make a ton of money, and I just don't know what's going to make up for that. I mean, I've actually heard people I've talked to said, you know, we spent this whole time talking about UFC. They said UFC betting has gotten much, much better. People are betting on it all the time. They think it'll see a spike with no NFL if it happens.
Baseball.
Yeah, baseball. But you're still going to see – you're still not going to get that same handle. I mean, if you've been to Vegas on an NFL weekend and been on the Strip and in the sports weeks, you know that the buzz that it's around, and everyone has big tickets on the games, and I just don't know – I mean, that would just be such a fatal blow to an industry that's already kind of struggling. I mean, that's just, it's hard to even imagine.
It's the Detroit of the West.
Yeah, the Detroit of the West. And the NFL would just be, I mean, I can't even imagine Vegas without the NFL. So hopefully they get it worked out, but obviously out of our hands here.
We do need to get your expert opinion here, because you're not like one of the front-running Heat quote-unquote fans. You've actually been a very long-time Miami Heat fan. And I know you probably did shed some
2006 is still my high point.
Yeah,
after
exactly. You've probably did shed some tears last night. But expert analysis, with the dust having settled, what do the Heat need to do next year to at least? I mean, look, they were a threat this year. Even with a thin bench, they made it all the way to the finals, pushed it to 6 games. Probably should have won the series. Gotten their own way. They can't be that far off.
Oh yeah, no, not that far off at all. But I mean, you would like a couple of better signs. I mean, you need one more big guy, and probably want to upgrade a point guard. You're probably going to lose Chalmers now, I think, because he had such a good finals. I think he's going to make a little bit more money elsewhere. I'm a huge Mike Bibby fan. He's one of my favorite players ever.
He hardly played. Did he play at all last night?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I only saw the end of the game as I was flying, but I didn't see him play much. But he is just not the same anymore. I mean, it's not fair to him. This is what happens to athletes, yeah. You know? He's not the answer. So they've got some... They've got some things to work out, but look, I mean, they were really close, and I think some people have shook their heads when I've said this, but this loss last night, to me, hurt even less than Game 2. I think Game 2 is where they lost the series. I mean, that was just pitiful. Were they up 15 with 2 minutes?
Yeah.
People say, well, everything could have worked out different. I still think if they win that game, they're up 3-0, and I like their chances to win. You know, if the Mavericks run off 3 in a row, I like the possibility of a game 7. So game 2 to me was just the one where, I mean, I still haven't gotten over game 2.
The point guard spot is very interesting because, I mean, heck, last night you could tell Spoelstra was maybe getting a little desperate with Eddie House getting major minutes in both halves. But you're not going to be able to get in some all-star caliber point guard because all all-star caliber point guards now score 20 points a game. None of them are going to want to go there and run in the same backcourt with Wade and LeBron and sacrifice their entire offensive game. I could see this being a situation where year to year they're just bringing in veterans, guys like Jason Kidd, maybe at the end of their career wanting to win a ring, still have something to give.
Yeah, I could see that too because, I mean, that's the other thing that guys don't want to give up. It's more than just their 20 points a game. They don't want to give up their paycheck.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to give up a little bit of a paycheck to go to Miami. So I think that's a good call. Maybe an older veteran like a Bibby, even though Bibby I don't think worked out, unfortunately. That's probably the type of guy you're going to see go to the Heat. Look, I mean, I know everyone, LeBron is the anti-everything. No one likes him, but I will still say that the guy is an overwhelming favorite to have a ring or two by the end of this whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still fun to watch him fail a time or two.
Oh, no, I know it's fun. I mean, it's not fun for me, but I understand why it's fun for everyone else. Disappointed today, but, you know.
Especially to watch him take his ball and go home right after the game ended.
Life goes on, I guess, for me.
See, but that's the mindset of all Miami sports fans. It's amazing. This is the last thing I want to hit on with this game. I was so appalled when I saw the Mavs out on South Beach celebrating at a club with the trophy last night, and everyone around them was just going nuts and fist pumping, and it was very Jersey Shore like. That shows you what a terrible sports town Miami is.
I saw your tweet and I kind of laughed.
LA is the same
look,
way.
Here's the thing. This is a favorite city of you and a lot of people to hate on for being a sports city is Atlanta, and I will defend Atlanta with my biggest heart that it is the college football center of the world, so I don't think it deserves the tag as a terrible sports city. Miami, I don't even really have much defense because I think there's just so much to do in Miami. There's just I don't feel like there's that buzz for a team. Even the Heat, and it doesn't help that everyone that has money bought all the Heat tickets this year, so half the games weren't even full because they're not giving away the tickets. But, I mean, I really don't even have any defense for Miami as a sports town. There you go. I admit it.
I did love Cuban calling out the Heat fans after the game, too.
Yeah,
that was pretty great. And it's like, look, you do that in Chicago. I said to someone this morning, you take that if Dirk beat the Bulls in Chicago in Game 6 to win the title and took that trophy down to Rush Street, I wouldn't throw things at him, but I know people would have.
I don't think he would have done it though. If he would have done it somewhere else, I think he probably knew the Miami landscape.
And I think there was some definite hatred on their part for Miami. I think they wanted to rub it in their face.
I think Dirk did, for sure. But congratulations to the Mavs. I'm a fan of anyone that sweeps the Lakers, so at least it went to them.
All right. Well, we'll let you go cry some more off the air. Any final comments before we get out of here? This week's edition of LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, the parting shot. What do you got?
I've got nothing. Just check out LasVegasSun.com. There you go.
All right. Well, I don't have anything either. For Case Kiefer, I'm Ryan Green. We'll talk to you next week. Bye. And whatever comes our way. Yeah, darling.